The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, and your mind. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. He is looking soft today. He's got his flower shirt. It must be a Friday. We're getting after it here. Michael Coleman. Michael, how you doing, brother? You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm feeling very vacation-y.
There you go.
Today,
in the middle of July, it's a good time. The dog days of summer here, and that's a good thing. A lot of people taking some vacation time this time of the year. You and I spoke briefly here before we started the show. It's a transient time. If you really want to move on something big, it's really hard because everyone's going out of town and everyone's changing things up and taking vacation times off. Kids are out of school. And it's just hard, kind of hard to get back into that mix a little bit. We'll get there and then football season starts. A lot of people finding out they need to go back to work, this RTO. And it was interesting because you sent me this article and I didn't realize this was still a thing. I thought the RTO thing was something that kind of went by the wayside after COVID. And I know that a lot of people said, well, wait a minute here. Let's see if it's working for us. We'll keep it. I know a lot of people love to work from home and I know why. Are they actually getting more done from home than they were, or do they just really like being able to cut the grass whenever the hell they want to and chime in, you know, for these, cause you can't keep track of somebody 24 hours a day. So your overall view on the RTO, did it work? Is it working? And I know some guy named Donald Trump, is all about getting people to go back to work, because I think when it comes to a government situation, we look at government workers as lazy people. We know that's not true. But you can make an argument that, yeah, they don't want to go back to work because they don't want to go back to work.
Yeah. So every once in a while I'll spend a little time on Indeed, just looking around and just trying to get the flow of how jobs are going and, you know, what's the demand, what's the primary the jobs are out there, because, you know, AI is starting to affect a lot of careers. Like Microsoft, you know, laid off 9,000 people, and it wasn't all computer techs and code writers, but part of what they're saying AI is going to end up replacing a lot of that. As I was out there looking, I noticed that there's still quite a lot of remote opportunities and hybrid. Typically what they look at when you're talking about hybrid is they will say, yeah, you can work from home, but we still want you, like, let's say New York City, for instance. Mm-hmm. They would say, yeah, the jobs in New York, you can be hybrid. That doesn't necessarily mean travel back and forth to New York City. What it means is you can work from home, but you still need to be in the city to where you can come in if needed and those kind of things. Sure. But there's all sorts of different models for that. And so depending on your view, there's just lots of pros and cons. So I think the model works, but it doesn't work for everybody. And so it all depends on what you as a company, what you value. And just from an overall, just somebody says, well, what's the cost of returning to work? Well, one of it is, you know, you lose out on talent. I mean, there's a lot of, if you are somebody who are looking for somebody very specific, with a certain type of traits, and then you go, okay, you have to be here. Well, there's a lot of people who may be interested in that job, may can do that job effectively, bring their skill sets to bear on that job, but are not in a place where they can move themselves or their family to that location. So you're going to end up limiting your opportunities. Now, for most jobs, that's not a huge challenge, but, you know, you can find somebody that's adequate or does a good job. But you may get a superstar who is looking for that kind of remote opportunity. And if most of the stuff is office work anyway, or that skill set, then, you know, a lot of people are saying, yeah, why pay for the extra office? Why pay? And as a matter of fact, just Wednesday, I had a friend in my Rotary Club, and she just retired from Maxwell Air Force Base, and she was a colonel. And I asked her, Do you work now? I mean, do you have a job now? And she said, well, I just got a remote job offered to me. A friend of a friend mentioned her name, and the company is actually in Michigan. And they said, we need somebody 10 to 20 hours a week to do this. And it was something that she had done in the Air Force. And she said, yeah, I can handle this. Mm-hmm. So they got somebody who's very skilled, very smart, but it's in Montgomery, Alabama, and they need that in Michigan. But basically what it is reviewing contracts and all that kind of stuff for special security classifications and all of that kind of stuff. And it's a unique skill set. But she's able to fulfill that role. So they sent her a computer. She's going to work from home. And, you know, they set everything up, communicate. So for some people, it works great. But there's also a lot to be said, especially if you're running a business and what you could potentially lose if you only did remote work.
Well, it's really easy to sit there. Obviously, if you do manual labor, this ain't going to work. You're going to have to be right in a shop. We understand this is purely a creative type of thing. You did a show last week that I thought was really good. A lot of people listened to, by the way. It was one of our most listened to shows here on Mission Minded. Also, Bite by Bite, about collaboration. You talked about it on Bite by Bite and how important it is to have that collaborative and have that creative feel. Some people need to be around other people, extroverts, in order to bounce ideas off of people. And they actually bring in a lot of sunshine into an office place. A lot of people are those people that like to sit in the back office with their lights off. You can't even tell if they're actually in the office or not. They normally are. And those people can work from home, depending on, again, what they're doing. But with that being said, the one thing that I thought was really interesting is it doesn't make financial sense. And I'll say this, you know, I worked at a radio station where we're highly creative. There were a couple of people who did not want to get the COVID shot. They were told if they don't get the COVID shot, they're going to get fired. They lawyered up, next thing you know, and they're still working from home. And I can't imagine being a radio salesperson and working from home, but that's how much the business has changed. We used to have 40 people in the office. Now we have six, or they have six. And it used to be an anthill of activity. There'd be stuff going on all the time. People beating ideas. We had promotions meetings every single week. We had programming. We don't have any of that anymore. And so I see, and because of that, I think radio is dead. I think it's gotten killed. It's very difficult to make money and TV too. But with that being said, as long as you're bringing in the money and you're doing the right work and you're not falling off your budget, then I'm okay with that. Let me ask you this, just nuts and bolts. How much business space do we have? I mean, I've been out, several people have asked me to move my business to the River Chase Galleria Towers. They've been trying to get me to move out there for 3 years. I'm in my master bedroom right now. I have a studio here. I have no reason to do that. They were willing to give me a place for nothing just to have the name Tony Curry on the windows. So people shopping and stuff would see that there's another business in there. But the place is empty and someone's paying for that. So how much does that go along to saying, listen, why should we have an 18-story building and have all these employees when they could just be working from home?
It's a great point. And it just shows how something like technology comes along, and then things that were never possible before are now possible. Let's step back out and look at a bigger picture. I was listening to some interviews, and one was a congressman talking about the cutting of NPR and PBS. Mm-hmm. $500 million each, so a total of $1 billion. And he said, it's like returning back to black and white television by eliminating this. And I thought to myself, how ridiculous of a comment it was, because back in the 60s, when PBS came along and there was three broadcast stations, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and that's all that there was.
Yep. Fox didn't even exist.
That's right. You had paid media. And NPR and PBS was designed to be, okay, we're not going to be paid. Nobody's going to be able to influence, in theory, our projection. It's where people can turn to and they're like, okay, this is as raw news as we can get. Well, fast forward that from 1960, you know, now we're 65 years later. Anybody at any time can pick any sort of news stream that they want to. And the idea that, oh, somehow we're going to be hurt because we can't. Now, you may prefer NPR, and that's a style. Same thing with PBS. But it's not like now we're going to be in the dark and not know what's going on in the world. Sure. I get it. A lot of things are slanted one way or another. And, you know, and maybe there's a market for a more middle of the road. But the idea that this is the equivalent of turning to black and white TV when everything is in the palm of our hand. We can stream channels, stream news all around the world. We can get access to anything at any time. And so I said all that. So as technology evolves, we're going to evolve with it and new opportunities are going to be created. And that's exactly what happened. We had the technology already with, you know, I think of how long Skype was around. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think about when I first deployed over to Germany. I've lived two different tours over there, a total of over 5 years. But all we had was the dial-up telephone. But now, if you're overseas, you can FaceTime with your family back in the States. You can do Zoom like we're doing now. I mean, it's just a whole different world, and that opens up opportunity. So the technology was already there, but we didn't have the push. A lot of businesses were like, oh, I'm scared to do this. What does this look like? I don't want to step out into this. Well, COVID pushed us over a cliff and said, now you have to figure out what it does. Well, they already had the technology, but it forced a comfort level with everybody now getting on it. So now getting on, whether it's a Teams meeting or Google or Zoom or whatever it is, it's a ubiquitous experience that you know, we all can identify with. It's not scary to say, hey, let's have a Zoom meeting as before, when it was like, oh, I'm afraid of the technology. So a company coming in can say, wait a minute, can these jobs be done from home? And let's say we have to have a coordination meeting a day. Yeah, we can do that over Zoom, but that is much less expensive than getting a facility, utilities, insurance, all the things that go with that. And let's face it, there's some businesses, you know, I know in Birmingham and a lot of major cities are doing this. They have these innovation centers. So they'll take an old warehouse. They'll create a bunch of offices. So if you're doing a startup as a business, let's say like you are, you just need a real small space. Mm-hmm. You can go in and rent a small space and maybe share a conference room, that kind of thing. And it gives you a space to grow your business until you need a bigger place. But a lot of people go, I don't need that. I like you. You create a platform and a network, and you do it all from home, and because technology enables you to do that. So why would you go out and take on those extra expenses? I've said this a couple of years ago, but I'll never forget that when we had COVID and I was in Birmingham at the time, the Blue Cross Blue Shield home office was there for Alabama Blue Cross Blue Shield. And everybody had to go to include the president, head of the CEO, couldn't come into work. And there was one of those buildings housed about 3,000 employees. Wow. And so now 3,000 employees are at home. So they have to equip them for that. You know, they have to give them the laptops. But once they were set up, then the question is, okay, we've already had this building. We own this building, you know, and I'm sure they have to pay maintenance on it, insurance, utilities, all that kind of stuff. And so the question is, how much do we need to bring people back? In other words, if I'm paying for 3,000 spaces inside of a building, do I need to do that? Or do we need to relocate to a smaller place and leave half people working from home? Those are all business decisions when you analyze the cost. And is this something, do we need, you know, everybody in the cubicle right there every single day? So all sorts of companies do analysis of what it costs, how much do we need, and they're making decisions that best fits their paradigm. So it works for some, but not for others.
We're talking about RTO mandates, pros and cons of that. He's Michael Coleman, CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. How much onus or how much responsibility do you put on the bosses, the managers, the superiors, the foremen, the people who overlooked a group of people in a particular business? They had to allow them to go work from home, and it was up to them to dictate whether it was working or not, whether they were getting their work done, whether their numbers were better or worse than they were the day before. I have a feeling that we didn't have a lot of those people in place during COVID. And so we didn't have a lot of people. When you're a boss and you have 15 people coming in every single day, you can keep track of everybody.
Right.
When you got 15 people working from home and you got one guy, maybe that's not enough. How much does that play into it?
Yeah, I mean, you get into this manager visibility and this oversight, and I just think about, I'll just eyes on what people are doing. So let's say, for instance, if I had 100 employees and they're all working from home. Now, we all know that somebody's not going to sit at their desk from 8 to 4 and just hammer away at the keys nonstop. The doorbell rings. Okay, the postman needs you to sign something. Oh, wait a minute. Your next door neighbor pops in for a chat. You got to run to the grocery store, whatever it is. And we feel free to do that. You're like, and I get it. In an ideal world, if a boss says, okay, here are the things I need you to get done today. Do you really care when it's done as long as it gets done? Most would say no. But there's so much inefficiency. Yes, you could. There are people who work better alone and can even be. But as a whole, there's less efficiency, which costs companies real dollars. And the thing about it is, think about if, like, I'm in my office right now and our bookkeeper's right beside us. There's a financial thing. I just get up and in 1 minute, I've worked it out. We've resolved it, what the question is. But what happens if I have that same question? Now I've got a text. I'm waiting. I'm calling. And I've got, and listen, you know, I've got several people on our same floor here, and I'm reaching out, and I can reach out and touch anybody at any given time. That's a huge advantage. So from a leadership perspective, most leaders who are managing people say, I prefer to be in-house because, you know, I need to have that visibility and that and monitor what people are actually doing. But the workers themselves, of course, don't want that kind of scrutiny. They want the freedom to, you know what, I just feel like sleeping in late this morning, or I feel like whatever, or, and they just get to it when they get to it. And, you know, and just for some perspective, all the, you know, it was like, 6 or 7% of the government was working from home.
Yeah.
And they said, there's probably people who hadn't stroked the key for the government in a year. They're drawing a paycheck every month because it was such a behemoth that a supervisor that, you know, supervisor, how do you tell 100 people are being efficient at work? So there are times. So this is, I'm now speaking just personal preference. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to be, I think being on site improves your collaboration. It, you know, the stronger culture, company culture, being together, forming those relationships, just that cross-departmental working environment. I think all that's really, really positive and really, really good. I do think that there are times and positions that can be. So I'll give you an example here. I have a couple of people, not full-time, but a couple of days for different reasons I won't get into, but I allow them to work from home. Mm-hmm. And it's where they can tend to a personal need, but still be productive. But I also have people who can't work from home. If you're a warehouse worker, you can't do that from home.
Yeah.
But if I'm doing inventory management, and all I am is logged in to our inventory system and I'm moving stuff and numbers and all that, it really doesn't matter what the location is. So I think it should be used where it fits, where it goes well for the company. I don't really like a one size fits all approach either way. And then the last thing I just touch on that as I'm thinking through this, talking with you about it, is one of the things I learned in larger organizations is, you know, is what they call reasonable accommodation. So I remember one time we had a guy who was a driver, mm-hmm. but he was getting treatment for his eye and he could no longer drive. And so while it wasn't a true handicap situation, we didn't know if he's ever going to get his vision back, whether he would be qualified to drive. But in the interim, while he's going through treatment, the law says that you have to provide a reasonable accommodation, and that's vague, if it's doable. So we had to look around the organization. Can we put this guy somewhere that's still helping the company? You don't have to go out and create a new spot, yeah. but is there something available or is it? And we manage that. So lots of times if somebody, I have somebody here, for instance, who struggles with eyesight, who's older. And so most of her work is on a computer. So a couple of days a week, I allow her, she lives an hour away. And we get started here so early every morning, I let her work from home 2 days a week. Now, there's certain days she has to be on site. And she has to be inspecting things, but a lot of it is just admin paperwork and that kind of stuff. And when it's those days, she can work from home. And I do that almost as a reasonable accommodation because it's a struggle for her sometimes to see at night and she's driving in when it's still dark, those kind of things.
Sure.
So I like to use remote work as much as I can as a reasonable accommodation to help employees. And that actually, it does. It boosts their morale because they feel like, you know, I'm not burning all my leave time. I can't get to work, but I still want to work. I still can work. And so there's just all sorts of variables that can come about through that. And you just have to really, I get it. Some leaders, some CEOs are just going to shut it down and say, nope, I'm not even going to consider it. I get it. But I do think having an open mind and having some at least being open to where it fits within your company culture is a positive thing.
You've already been working from home, or perhaps your boss is telling you to return to work and you want to continue to work from home. What's the best way to go about that with your boss? We'll ask Michael that question here in just a second. I want to get into the legal aspects of this. I don't even know if this is because you're the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. You've been a business owner, non-for-profit, and otherwise your entire life. Can you make, if I had a group of six people, I could tell you right now, just based off the six I would probably hire, two could work from home. The other four would have to have their ass in a work. Yeah. Just based on what I know about them in the past, maybe one's got tenure. Maybe one always hits his budget every single month. And as long as he's hitting his budget, that works for the radio yeah. station, blah, 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 blah. You're good. Can I make one guy come in and another guy not come in?
Absolutely.
Okay. And cause I mean, listen, there are some people that have to have their hands held, period.
And that's absolutely.
And it doesn't mean I don't trust you more than the other guy, but it means I don't trust you as much as the other guy. I mean, period. I know you're going to get more work done in.
Yeah, a lot of sales, if you think about it, a sales manager who has a territory is on the road all the time. He's not coming into an office every day. He's out checking and on the road, and that's his job. But as long as he's meeting his sales quotas, who cares if he's in the office? But, you know, the reality is like, I can take any job right now and I could say, I'm going to update this job description, because every job you have in a company should have a very clear job description. And if I wanted to change that to a hybrid or a remote officially in the job description, then I'd say, okay, we don't have the office space. I'll just make this up. We don't have the office space. We're going to make this a work from home. Now, what's required of me to do that is provide them all the tools and equipment and the training necessary for them to be successful on the job. So that means I have to invest in a computer for them to have, in the internet, everything they need. I can't require that they supply those things themselves. Mm-hmm. But if that person says, well, I want to come to work, I don't want that. A company has the ability at any time to change a job based on what that company leadership determines it to be. And just like I said, I allow some people to work from home on certain days for certain reasons. I can't do that same thing with the warehouse because they physically have to be here to move stuff around and do that. And so that job will never be remote, but I may increase as the time goes on. And like, especially we just hired a new marketing director. Now she's local, but let's say it was a marketing director in Birmingham and she couldn't get to the office every day. If she came with a great reputation, we saw examples of her work, we had great confidence, I might say something like, okay, you have to come to the office 1 or 2 days and actually touch base with us. And the rest of the time you can stay in Birmingham. So she'd have to make at least one trip. He or she would have to make one trip down here. And I can absolutely do that with that position. And this just goes back to a broader thing and personnel. You can do anything you want to. What you cannot do is the reason you're doing that cannot be based on all the protected things because of someone's gender, because of someone's sexual preference, gotcha, because of someone's race. As long as you can show that you're doing this and it's for the company and it applies to everybody, then you can run your company however you want to.
So what is the best way? We have a couple minutes left. What's the best way? If I've been working for you, I've been working remotely, you're like, I think it's time for you to come back to office, Tony. I think you have a lot of energy and you just, I mean, you're an extrovert and you're good for the office to have in here but your numbers are kind of the same when we did remotely and I want to spend more time with my boy at home. I don't want to drive back and forth, blah, 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 blah. What's the best way to go about sitting that down with your CEO and trying to make that happen?
Yeah, I think if I had established a remote work culture and now like Amazon, they had to call everybody back, federal government, same thing. I think most companies do. I mean, some of them are a little bit tougher. At least it comes across as a little bit tougher. I always like to, if I'm going to make a change, whether somebody agrees with it or not, I always want to offer them the reason. And like I said, then you're free to disagree with the reason, but it instills at least the confidence that I'm just not doing it out of spite or because I feel like it one day and don't feel like it the next day. So I feel like if you value your employees, you give them a heads up as far in advance as possible. You communicate with them and telling them why it's important that we be back on site, but that you also will entertain special accommodations if it's needed. Doesn't mean you're going to approve it, but you will at least provide an avenue for people to make special requests for hybrid work or something else, so that they can be heard of what their needs are and how that's going to be determined. And I think, again, there's some people, they're just going to say, well, screw this. I'm not going back into work. I'm not going back into that again. And that's a choice that everybody gets to make in our wonderful country of, hey, this isn't a good fit for me anymore. So I'm going to go do my thing somewhere else. And most people understand that. But when you make a decision for the company, and it's in the company's interest, and explain them, make it as easy an adjustment or a transition as you can for employees. If your company can afford it, even maybe do some little bonus, transition bonus, anything to soften the blow. And I think you, once people get in and they get used to coming back in, then, you know, people adapt and they overcome.
You can now watch a show on our YouTube channel. And of course, also check it out as many times you want on the Tony Curry Radio Network. It's on at least 5 days a week wherever you get your favorite podcast, or check us out on our YouTube channel so you can actually see it. I think about 4 to 1, I think it is. And people actually like to see our faces talk about what we're talking about here. Great business show. HAFB, hashtag that bad boy, Heart of Alabama Food Bank. He's the CEO. And of course, coming up here on our network of radio stations, Bite by Bite. It's a little shorter program, specific to the Heart of Alabama Food Bank and Feeding America. We'll do that next. We appreciate you listening. Thank you, Michael. Until next week, my man. Have a good weekend.
I loved being with you again, brother. And I will, and you do as well.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.